The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to episode 98 of the Sisters in Loss podcast. Recurrent pregnancy loss is defined as 3 consecutive losses prior to 20 weeks gestation. Today's guest, Tanisha Garnier, has experienced the loss of her son Xavier Lawrence at 21 weeks due to a short cervix that wasn't detected until her 19-week ultrasound. Tanisha has also beat infertility from being diagnosed with polycystic ovarian syndrome, also known as PCOS, and having a history of not ovulating because of irregular periods. She was able to conceive Xavier after a few months of fertility treatments with her OBGYN, and after a year, she tried again. In this episode, she has birthed her miracle and rainbow baby girl named Ezra Joy at 25 weeks. We had to reschedule this episode due to a scare that she had with preterm birth in her pregnancy, and I'm so excited that we were able to chat about her experience with Ezra and being in the NICU thus far. This episode is for you to listen to if you've ever been diagnosed with PCOS, incompetent cervix, had a micropreemie, and an extended NICU stay. Here is Tanisha Garnier.
Well, thank you, Tanisha, for being on the podcast.
No problem.
So I'd like to start out with you sharing a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Okay. Well, right now I am stay-at-home mom, but me and my husband live in Birmingham, and I have worked as a family therapist. I've worked in a church nursery. I've done some part-time teaching, adjunct teaching, and just kind of writing freelance here and there. So kind of all over the place right now.
Awesome. So take us back on your journey to motherhood and tell us your loss story.
Okay. Well, me and my husband, Victor, got married in November 2012. And at that point, I was still in school. I was in a PhD program. And so since I was in school and he was getting out of the military and transitioning careers, we both were agreeing that we would wait for 3 years. 3 years was the magic number. And then after 3 years, we could have all the babies we wanted. So 3 years later, I got off birth control and nothing happened. And I had very irregular periods. And so my period wasn't coming. We weren't pregnant. Every month I thought I was pregnant because I didn't have a period. And it was just a really frustrating time period. So we did that for about a year. After that, we went to my gynecologist and explained what had been going on and Clomid. And we started up, eventually ended up at 1 round. And the first 2 didn't work. And then the 3rd one did. And at that point was the week of my birthday when I was supposed to that year. And well, that month, it was April. That month was my birthday month. And I just told Victor that, you know, if it didn't work this time, we could just take a break for the summer and not really try to worry about getting pregnant. And that was the cycle that we got pregnant. And so there's just a lot surrounding that pregnancy that we just kind of felt like, okay, this is the Lord giving us what we've asked for. Everything's awesome. This is wonderful. And pretty much it was an uneventful pregnancy. I had your typical morning sickness and all that, which was hard, but I was very thankful for because that meant, you know, I'm still pregnant. And so went along ultrasound, and then when we went for the jail, it was transitioning in. It was in fire academy and could not get off work, and they were very adamant about that. And so I had to go to that appointment by myself, but I had planned for them to like put the gender in an envelope, and we would have a cupcake later, and I'd take it to a bakery and they'd put the pink or blue you know, that whole thing. So that's what I was mostly concerned about that day. Like, I didn't want to find out the gender without him, but I was so excited to see, you know, the anatomy scan and the full ultrasound. And so during the ultrasound tech was taking a really long time, like on something that was not the baby. Like, we had had enough that I knew, like, to look for the head and the silhouette of a human. And she just kept focusing on what looked just like blobbiness. And she said, oh, I'm just measuring your cervix. And she just kind of kept doing the click and pull of the, I don't know, the dot, dot, dot line that kind of measures everything on ultrasound. And she just kept doing that over and over, over and over. I was like, oh my gosh, well, why does she need to measure my cervix so many times? I'm ready to see my baby. And so eventually she printed a couple of those out and then baby. And we now know it was a boy and he was just bopping around and I cried because it was, you know, it was just a beautiful, beautiful experience. And I went in my doctor's office, or her exam room rather, and waited and waited and waited and waited for what seemed like forever. And she finally came in and she said, hey, your cervix is short and this could be a problem. And unfortunately, I knew about short cervix and incompetent cervix because I had a twin and they thought that was the reason. It ended up not being the reason, but I was familiar with where she was going. And so I knew possibility of preterm labor, the possibility of like a loss late, this late in the pregnancy. At that point, I was 19 weeks. And so she started me on progesterone suppositories. And so I did that for a week and I was supposed to have a follow-up with her 2 weeks after that appointment. Did not make it because at 21 weeks and a couple of days, my water broke at home. We were in the kitchen cooking dinner and all of a sudden everything just kind of gushed out and we were rushing to the hospital. Once we got there, a bunch of scary doctors came in one by one, kind of shedding light on us. So my doctor came in and said, you know, the goal for you to make it to 24 weeks is still our standard. If the baby comes, what really any interventions we can do. Neonatologist came in and said, okay, if you make it to 24 weeks, that will be great. However, the baby could have a lot of issues. Here are all the issues that could present with a 24-weeker. And there was another doctor, I can't remember exactly what they said, but it was just a lot of information flooding us at once. And we were really, really scared, trying to be hopeful and hope for the best, hope for more time. And then since I wasn't in labor and I'd been in hospital for two days, they sent us home for me to just be on bed rest at home until I made it to 24 weeks and then they would admit me. But once we got home, 2 days after my water broke, contractions started almost maybe like an hour after we had been home. And I initially thought it was just like I needed to have a bowel movement or something, but I just kept remembering and reading about labor and the idea coming in waves. And it just kept coming, like it would be really painful and then it would subside and then it would come back really painful and then it would subside. And I started thinking, you know, like, this is kind of coming in waves. Oh crap, this is happening. So at that point, my parents were here. We all rushed back to the office. I was, like 6 centimeters dilated by the time we got there. So it wasn't that long of, you know, waiting for my cervix to progress. And yeah, Xavier was born on September 29th around 3 o'clock. And it was a beautiful day and the sun was streaming in our room. And it was, it's just one of those memories that's kind of like cemented in your brain forever. Just how it was just so paradoxical, how beautiful, how horrible a situation it was. And so he was born alive for about 15 minutes, but still, I think just that brief window and brief moment into, I don't know, seeing him kind of struggling to breathe. It was hard, but it just kind of helped me see like your baby is alive. Like this is a baby. This is a human being that came from you. You can see he's dying. He's not going to make it, but he was here and he experienced this 15 minutes of life with you doing what mamas do, which is comfort their babies no matter how long. And so, yeah, so he passed and basically just like my doctor had said, it was, he was 21 weeks and 4 days. And so there wasn't any, you know, rushing him to the NICU or anything. It just kind of let us hold him as long as we wanted. And after he passed, they, again, just gave us time with him as much as we wanted. And it was just me and my husband in the room. All the nurses, nursing staff left. And we just sang hymns over him. We sang It Is Well. We sang Come Thou Fount. Just anything that came to our minds, we just sang over our sweet baby. And I don't know how much time had passed, but then we called one of the nurses back and they came and got him. And yeah, that's pretty much the story. I was in the hospital till the next afternoon and then we were discharged. And so we had that weird feeling of leaving the labor and delivery floor without your baby. And just kind of, I don't know, it was just a big fog of everything. It just all seemed so surreal that all of that had just happened. It had just happened to me. And we were leaving and going home without our child anymore. And I wasn't pregnant anymore. So, yeah, that's Xavier's birth story.
Wow. So, did you all burial for Xavier?
We didn't. We had our pastor came that Friday after he was born. Our pastor and a couple of really close friends and our parents were there. And we sang a song or two. I read a letter that I had written to him the night before he was born. And yeah, our pastor shared some words, but in the state of mind I was in, I don't really recall what they were. But I just remember feeling very comforted and, you know, held up by the people around us, which was really good in a horrible situation. But
absolutely. So take us back on how your faith played a role into you breathing and going through the healing process after your loss.
That was very difficult. So I've been a Christian for the majority of my life. My parents raised us in church. So I've known the Lord and I've known him as provider and as healer and as, you know, one that's all powerful and can do anything and everything. And so with the situation with Xavier, and I put a lot of faith in, you know, okay, well, if we're meant to get to that, God will do it. And so the fact that we didn't really, it took a toll on my faith, honestly, because I felt like, you know, here we are, we're a Christian couple. We try our best to live righteously and this horrible thing has happened to us. And not only that, like I mentioned, my friend had lost twins the year before. And so it wasn't just like a selfish, like it's happening to me again. I was thinking broader with our church community, like, oh my gosh, this is another, you know, horrible situation where parents have lost after having this whole body of believers behind us and emails and texts going out telling everyone to pray and believe and have faith. And it didn't work, quote unquote. And so it really made me, you know, reevaluate my idea of who God is and what his sovereignty means. And these really horrible situations, really hard seeing your child in any kind of pain. It's like, no, let me stop it immediately. And so, but to women and families all around the world, I just thought, you know, if he could stop this, why doesn't he? And why does this happen? Like, war and famine and all these other things, I feel like they're bad, but they're kind of consequences or cause and effect. Like this country says the border's here, this one says it's here, they don't agree, so they go to war. That's fine. Like it sucks, but it makes sense. But a baby be conceived to die didn't worldview of what was right and good. So the whole season was just really, really bad for me and my faith. I didn't go to church, be around people. I didn't want to see people with kids. I just wanted to be isolated. That's what I did for the most part. It was miserable. Like I thought, like this is what I need to do to cope, but hiding and stuffing, and it was not good. And so when my due date with Xavier passed, which was February, I would say that was probably the darkest period. I never walked away from my faith, but I did at that point take a like, okay, I'm just here. Like, if I go to church, I'm just here. I'm not paying attention. I'm not trying to learn anything. I'm just here. And then in March, I started going to counseling with a Christian counselor in town. And she just kind of walked right out my notes and go to my session on Thursdays. And I think that exercise alone did wonders for my relationship with the Lord, because I think it's really easy as Christians to feel like, okay, bad stuff happens, but God is good and we have to keep moving along. But David shows us very clear examples of, you know, this is not what I wanted and I'm upset and I'm mad at you. And it sounds bratty, but I think especially in grief over something as horrible as child loss, you have to have that reality check, I guess, with God, where, you know, he is good and he is sovereign, but there are things that are in his plan that we would not put there if it was us. And so that just really gave me a freedom to pray in a way that I didn't think was allowed. I thought, you know, you pray to God for, you know, thank him and give him glory and praise him. And, but you don't do that. You think he's horrible. Like, you don't do that. A couple of other people just kind of helped me, have a language for how I felt of the Lord and the beauty of the cross in light of grief. And so around Easter that year, had a whole lot of meditation and thinking about the cross and not only Jesus and God being separated when he was crucified, but I really focused in a lot on Mary, which I'm not Catholic, but just seeing her as his mother and watching her son suffer, I just really, it really resonated with me. And so it was really, you know, after April that year that started to turn around in my relationship with the Lord. So I hope that answers your question.
Oh, no, that absolutely answers my question.
Today's podcast episode is sponsored by Living Waters Doula Services. Out of her belly will flow rivers of living water. Rivers carry life and bring it forth to those who need it. I am excited to begin offering Living Waters Doula Services to my sisters-in-law. What is a doula? A doula is a non-clinically trained support person who provides emotional, physical, and informational assistance before, during, and after childbirth. My goal as your doula is to help you heal, remove anxiety and fear, and find peace and hope on your infertility and pregnancy journey. If you are currently trying to conceive and would like fertility support, if you are currently pregnant after loss, or if you want grief support for your recent loss, I'm available to share space with you as your doula and support you on this journey. For more details about Living Waters Doula Services, visit ericammcafee.com/doula. That is ericammcafee.com/doula. I'm excited to share space with you.
So take us on your journey to trying again and having your rainbow baby and that whole pregnancy.
So kind of going backwards, after Xavier passed, which was September, I had a natural period, like I wasn't on birth control or anything, that November. And so in my head, I was like, oh, the Lord has restored my fertility as a result of losing my baby. So we can try immediately. And I just became real focused on, you know, not going to get over losing my baby until I have another one. I'm not going to get over losing him until I have another one. And so, like I said, going back to saying before of that winter period, just being really dark for, you know, a baby to replace what I had lost, and just thinking like, oh, if I would just be pregnant again, then I wouldn't feel like this, because I've gotten used to feeling pregnant and now I'm not, and I don't know who I am or what I am. I just need to be pregnant again. And that was wrong. I can't speak for everyone, but for me and for my family and with my husband, that's not what God needed for us at that time. And I can look back now in hindsight and see, you know, oh yeah, totally. And so after 17, we decided like, okay, we're just not even gonna try. I can't go through this every month trying to figure out when I'm ovulating, if my period's going to come, if it's not. And so I didn't go back on birth control, but we just kind of used other kind of preventative methods. And I told my husband to give me till August, because he was, you know, grieving in his own way, but still really open to trying again. Whereas with having a short cervix, the likelihood of multiple losses, like frequently, not frequently, but repetitive losses is really high. And so I was really scared of that happening. But I said, give me to August and we'll start the whole thing over again. So August last year, we moved to a different doctor. We started seeing like a reproductive, and I had been diagnosed PCOS. I don't think I mentioned that. So we went with that. He confirmed that diagnosis through some G test, which is where they do the, I guess, the dye in your fallopian tube to make sure they're clear, and they were fine. And so he started me on, I just forgot the name of the medicine. Starts with an L. It was a different ovulation medicine. Not Lexapro, that's for depression. Letrozole? Letrozole, yes. And so, yeah, I started taking that. And then in November, after our anniversary, we were pregnant. And we were both terrified. I just remember out from when I ovulated on that cycle to when, if I was pregnant, when a test would be positive. And so it was the night before I was to take that test. And I just was dreading waking up the next morning. I was dreading getting a negative test. I was dreading starting this whole process over again that I had just done the year before. And my husband came home from work off of his shift with the fire station. And I peed in a cup. And I was pregnant. It was a very faint positive, but, you know, in the fertility world, a line is a line. And so it was there. And I don't know, I just kind of felt robbed in a sense of that, you know, blissful, innocent, like, oh, we're pregnant and we're going to have a baby. It was more so, okay, there's a fertilized child in me. I don't know where they'll end up, but for right now, this is fine. And because I was considered high risk after having a loss and having the cervical issues, I got seen very frequently. So very inconvenient for, like I said, my husband's a firefighter, so working around his schedule was difficult. But we got to get in probably the next day to confirm with a blood test. And we went back 2 or 3 days after that to continue to watch the HCG levels rise. And they did. And so then we were told, like, okay, 6 weeks, we'll see you. And that was the longest 6 weeks of my life. But yeah, we came back and a little flickering heartbeat of my short cervix. We did opt for having a cerclage placed, which is just a stitch on your cervix to keep it closed, hopefully, through pregnancy. And then at 16, I started progesterone shots to, again, hopefully keep the cervix from thinning and labor starting. Lose a child, you're very aware of what could happen. And that was very much the case for us. But once we found out, once we were confirmed by the doctors, we told a lot of people when I was 5 or 6 weeks. We waited a really long time. We just wanted to let everyone know as soon as we knew. And with that was really helpful because I had a whole community of people, once again, praying for me, calling me, texting me, encouraging me with each week that passed. So, really, best savior. There weren't any real issues. There was one thing with one of her ultrasounds where one of the levels was off. I can't remember what it was. But we had to talk to a geneticist and it was really scary, but then it ended up being fine, whatever the issue was. I apologize. That's not very informative. But then, let's see, 21 weeks came, and I had a lot of fear that week, just with it being parallel to when Xavier passed. And it was the week of Easter this year. And so, I don't know, there was something about getting to experience Easter with my husband, pregnant, with my church family that just was really special to me. And I'm just forever thankful for that day. I had my water started to gush out. Again, kind of like almost like PTSD, like everything just very much the same. Like we had to rush to the hospital. When I was pregnant, but like we were going this time though, so that was different. They checked me. And since it was a foreign body, they had to remove it, which was very painful. And then after one of the doctors in the room said that I was 4 centimeters at night, it was just me and my husband who had shared the secret, I guess. And so with everyone around the hospital bed, my mom, my dad, his mother, some friends, pastors, joy, you know, joy. And it also goes with the week of Advent that we celebrate at our church. Love, peace, joy, and our four concepts that we kind of talk about leading up to Christmas. And the joy week was the week that we went for our ultrasound. Her name. And yeah, we thought we were going to have Ezra Joy that night, but I had other plans. And they watched me that weekend to make sure I didn't go into labor or have any infection signs. And then after that, I was moved to the high risk floor. I stayed for 2 weeks on bed rest. I was able to move around a little bit, but they just didn't want me up and walking around for more than like 10 minutes. So that, honestly, that whole 2 weeks, because every day kind of melted into the next one. But it was a lot of prayer, a lot of, you know, music and worship music just to keep myself encouraged. Because I had lost a child already, I was kind of buffering myself like, okay, this could happen again. And if it does, it will be horrible. But you've survived it once. You could do it. You can do it again. God will carry you through if this baby dies. See? Pregnancy and even like in motherhood, mothering her, it's all held with kind of a loose hand where she's a gift that God's given us, but ultimately she's not ours. He is sovereign and he loves her more than I do. And he is going to take care of her in ways that I can't. And so, yeah, I was on bed rest for 2 weeks. Then labor started one night. Husband was not at the hospital. He was taking an exam for a course he was in. My mom was there though. He was there by the time it was go time. But again, there was a lot. There were very similar feelings, emotions, and I don't know. I guess I was expecting it to feel, you know, at a different hospital with different doctors, but it's just I don't know, ingrained in our minds of what we remember and what sticks out. So we did the epidural, all that. And after a couple of pushes, so yeah, she came home. Well, she was born April 25th, came home August 19th. And so it's almost been 2 months and she is doing really well.
Awesome. Well, tell us about the resources or tools that you use to help you on your grief journey.
How to combat those lies with the word. That was probably number one helpful thing. Like I said, there were also some books that I read. One of them was No More Faking Fine by Esther Fleece, which was not a book about child loss, which I know different people like different things. I really liked the fact that that wasn't about child loss because I could pick from the themes that resonated with me and not worry about the rest. One book that was about child loss is Coping with Neonatal Loss, Miscarriage and Infertility. And that is by Amy Wenzel, I believe. And that was a very kind of academic, straightforward book. Not really flowery wording, your baby's another rose in God's garden or anything like that. I did a devotion that was, I think it was called The Baby I Never Knew, or it had a really pretty cover. But I did that and that was helpful just early on in the process. And later, I guess this was while I was pregnant with Ezra, and through my bed rest day at the hospital, I read Pain and Stuff, and that was really a good resource. Kind of dense, but I really liked it. I also, grief-wise, I joined a gym, and I made sure I worked out every day, and I'm not too big into, you know, fitness, but they aren't lying when they say that working out, you know, does wonders for your endorphins or whatever. It just really helped me kind of get a rhythm to my day, because at that point, basically since Xavier, I haven't gone back to full-time work. In the first few months after him, I wasn't working at all. I was just at home by myself a lot. And so going to the gym every day kind of gave me a rhythm to like, okay, step, put on clothes, put on shoes, get in your car, drive down the street to the gym, watch, you know, Ellen or whatever. I didn't always said kind of battling with my relationship with the Lord, but I did have really good community around me.
Thank
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I pray that this show was inspirational and a blessing to you. For show notes, visit ericamcafee.com/podcast. Please join us in our offline discussions in our private Facebook group by going to sistersinloss.com. If you're listening in Apple Podcasts, please rate and subscribe to us and leave us a 5-star review. I pray that you all have a blessed week. Keep the faith, and I'll talk to you next Wednesday.